내가 빠져나가.
내 쌤 빌려줘 하나.
When most people think of Liberia, it is often within the narrow framework of the 14-year civil war that devastated the country and displaced over 1.5 million Liberians across the globe. If they have any knowledge of the history of Liberia, they will remark on the fact that Liberia was founded by free slaves from America. In Minnesota, the focus of attention is often on TPS, temporary protective status, which gives refugees temporary immigration status because they are unable to return to their country due to armed conflict, natural disasters, or other extraordinary conditions. The issue of TPS is echoed across the country for Liberians. However, there are only 1,000 Liberians in Minnesota that are under TPS, in a community of over 30,000. Though it is a critical issue in the community, it quickly becomes clear that the Liberian story and character is much more complex. With a history spanning over 50 years, the Liberian community in Minnesota flourishes in this complexity. As a Liberian artist that has lived in Minnesota since the mid-90s, I'm interested in the growth of the Liberian community and where it stands today. From conversations with a wide range of Liberians in Minnesota, including Winfred Russell, Abdullah Kiyotumba, Aurelius Butler, Mimini George, Yema Brewer, Peace Tar, Oliver Clark, and others, this program weaves a narrative of the community and its evolution.
Lieutenant.
According to organizer, educator, and politician Winfred Russell,
Liberians are one of the oldest African immigrant groups to settle in Minnesota. My research showed that the Liberians began settling here back in the mid-50s. And many of the Liberians that settled here during that period were students. And a number of them came from Nima County. And they came here on scholarship from the Lamco Mining Company in Nima. It's a joint venture American-Swedish mining company that operated out in northern Liberia in Nima County.
Many of these students return home, becoming part of the professional and political life in Liberia. Others stayed in Minnesota. Liberians continued to settle in the state throughout the 60s and 70s without any significant change. However, in April of 1980, a coup led by Samuel Doe, Thomas Kwayampa, and others took over the government with the assassination of President William Tolbert. This coup overturned the 133-year rule by American Liberians, the descendants of the freed slaves of America.
The military tribunal tried 13 government officials of the Tolbert regime. All of them were found guilty and condemned to death by a firing squad.
The violence that followed, first against the previous administration, then against the people, caused many to flee the country. Taking refuge wherever they could, many Liberians found their way to America, first settling in the east, then the south, and a large number settling in Minnesota. By 1983, Doe and Kwayampa were at odds. Kwayampa, who was now general of the Liberian army and called the people's general, was given 48 hours to leave the country. He soon found himself exiled to Minnesota with his wife and child.
In 1985 was an abortive coup attempt against the Samuel Doe government. And that coup attempt was led by a prominent Nima citizen called Thomas Kwiwonkwa. When the attempt was put down, the Doe government went on this killing rampage of people from Nimba County. So a number of people from Nimba were exiled into Ivory Coast. So Kurongpa was killed. The whole planning of that coup attempt also took place in Minnesota. Part of it took place in Minnesota.
The largest wave to flee Liberia, however, was the result of the civil war that saw the assassination of Doe and the rise of Charles Taylor, scattering Liberians around the world. Because there was already a growing Liberian community in Minnesota, and because Minnesota had demonstrated success with previous resettlement programs, it received the bulk of the refugees.
Typically, they would resettle people in places where, you know, there was a support system already in place. So a number of these people came here, and other, you know, Liberians too from other parts of the country started coming here with, you know, different connections and all of that.
Journalist and publisher of the Liberian Journal, Abdullah Kiatumba.
But I think the state too is very welcoming, and a lot of social services in Minnesota. That's one of the things what a lot of Liberians think. You can easily pick up social service network of social service organizations, resettlement groups, organizations, and the state has some liberal leaning to the extent where Liberians feel easily accommodated by people who appreciate diversity.
My name is Aurelius Butler, and I work as a clinical researcher at a facility in Edina, Minnesota. Well, I guess my first impression of Minnesota was that it was a clean place. Because I'd lived in Philadelphia at the time. I had lived in Philadelphia for 11 years, and my kids had been born there. And the home, we owned a home there, but there was not much of a yard for my kids to play, so they had to play on the sidewalk. And coming to Minnesota, we saw that there was a lot of playground, parks all over the place. And it was just a good place to raise a family.
Though there are Liberian communities in Rhode Island, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Atlanta, Australia, Britain, Norway, and others, Minnesota is widely considered to be the largest Liberian population outside of Liberia. Joining us now is Professor of History at McAllister College, Peter Ratcliffe.
To my knowledge, Minnesota, and more specifically the Twin Cities, and then even more specifically the northern and western suburbs, have the largest Liberian community in the United States. We think the community around Providence is probably second, Philadelphia probably third.
Minnesota is huge. I mean, this is huge Liberian community. If you ask any Liberian, any part of, anywhere in the United States, which community you think is the largest Liberian community, they'll say Minnesota. Just a reality. Minnesota is huge. And sometimes just going to an event is like meeting 10, 50, 20, 30 person at the same time. So I think is that sense of community is at a shopping mall, is at a school, is at a workplace, is in a library. It's like a mobile community wherever you go. It's that sense of security, that sense of belonging that exists in Minnesota is unique, is uniquely Minnesota. It's unlike any other state. You don't have that kind of reality where you go to the store, guys sound Liberian, you know. It would be strange, you know. And also the geography of the area, too. There's that concentration of Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center. There's nowhere in Atlanta with that kind of concentration. So that helps to bind people together to some extent.
Activist, graphic artist, and educator, Mamini George.
I don't know what brought people together. I just know for a fact that when you found somebody, it's almost like you wanted to be close to them, at least from my perspective at the time. It was just a lot of Liberians needing help from each other because there was a huge migration by 1999, 2000 to 2002. And everybody wanted to be close to somebody who could show them the ropes, who knew what they were talking about, who knew the system, who understood where they could get help. And so everybody just kind of got together. So it's almost like you feel a magnetic pull to something that's similar to you, and you just want to be in that environment where you feel secure or safe And I think that's how that started.
My name is Yema Brewer, and I currently work for a nonprofit organization doing community health education. Something from my perspective, again, being a school kid, I noticed that whereas when I started, you know, in the Robbinsdale School District, kindergarten, first grade, when I started elementary school, my sister was starting high school in the same school district, and both she and I remember that there was probably no more than 20 Liberian students, early 90s, right? By the end of 2000, you know, when I get to the same high school she was at, we're probably a good 10% of the school, you know, and even more so in the Osseo School District, which includes schools in Brooklyn Park, the Brooklyn Center School District. So I just noticed a difference with, you know, the community growing, but then a significant portion of the growth in the community being from, like, young people and, you know, youth, young adults.
The community quickly became a beacon of the Liberian communities in the diaspora, socially, economically, and politically. We spoke with P. Sotar, educator and political activist.
Oh, I love the Liberian community. I remember my first weekend was a party. And so I was able to meet a whole slew of people that I hadn't seen for a while from Liberia. It was just refreshing because out in Worcester, that wasn't happening. I mean, I lived in a little small, tight-knit community with Liberians, but there weren't people that I already knew, you know, people from my father's families, people that my father knew maybe. But here, these were my peers. These were people that I went to school with, people that I hung out with in Liberia. So it was really, it was great for me because I was able to connect. So for me, I loved it that the community was here and was visible. Like almost every red light just stopped, especially out in Brooklyn Park area. There was somebody that if you turned around, you knew that was a Liberian. You saw a little Liberian flag sticker on a car or something like that. So it was really, I felt welcomed.
I remember, you know, my mom and my aunts being involved with like their ethnic associations or county associations. A lot of those groups are active, or like susu clubs, where, you know, people come together and pool, you know, put a certain amount of money every month, you know, and then there's a system of how they can give loans out, you know, so people are, you know, using their connections and network in the community to, you know, pretty much survive in this type of environment, you know, relying on each other for support.
What was it? Was that it's too cold for Liberians to really like the place. It was strange that they really live, you know, and so that was one aspect. The other impression was that there was social activities like events, organizing parties, celebrations, churches, and OLM was the center of attractions for a lot of Liberian folks in the state. And so that was my impression. And I think that Liberians were kind of excelling to some extent.
My impression was that the Liberian community here was just like the Liberian communities everywhere. We wanted to live here as we did in Liberia, as a community, as a family. And we all, of course, have our differences, and there's some strife and confusion amongst ourselves, but when you finally come down to it, when things get hard, we come together. This is the way it was in Philadelphia, and that's what I saw here.
The Liberian community in Minnesota is not only contributing to the economy within the state, but to Liberia as well.
You know, Liberians set up one of the earliest newspaper in this town. The African Journal, it was called. You know, and I remember when I came here first, you know, I wrote for them, submitted one or two articles, you know, for them. But they were in existence long before I even came here.
Everybody, when they came, they wanted to be able to take advantage of the land, quote unquote, of opportunity, you know. And so they just want to go straight into the workforce, make some money to be able to sustain themselves and their family, and help, which is a big big part of it helped the folks back home.
You want to progress as an individual. You want to make progress in your life. You want to make progress for your friends and family, because even living here, you still have a lot of people back home that count on you financially. They count on you for support, everything.
At the same time, it was then that I began to realize that we as Liberians in this community have a lot of economic clout, because we have businesses, and there were a lot of Liberian businesses. A lot of us own homes, so we were taxpayers. I mean, we're paying taxes for homes to support the schools and all of that. But at the same time, even though we're doing all of these things, we were not actually allowing ourselves to become a part of the greater community, the larger community. And so we started to speak to people to do things like that.
And another aspect that a lot of people have pointed to, but they do not have a number, is that a lot of Liberians in Minnesota, college degree is a growing number of them. You know, even the government in Liberia, a lot of folks came from Minnesota, a good number of came from Minnesota, playing deputy minister, ministers. In fact, one time we had about 4 ministers just from Minnesota. Deputy ministers, got about 8 or 9 of them. So that's a huge aspect to that. So there's a lot of professional development here that is being transferred. You know,
One of the major things I've noticed lately in the Liberian community is we are not just expanding, but I think we have been hit by epiphany. Was like, how can we give back to Liberia? That's the new trend I'm seeing right now within the Liberian communities. Between the time I've been here and the time I've lived in different communities, because back then all you want to do is just be here, go to school, work, and do what you can do to make yourself okay, you know what I mean, to make your work for your family and sustain your family. But the new trend I've noticed over the last 2 years, I would say 3 years or so, a lot of Liberians have been finding a way to give back to Liberia. And even with the Shoe for Liberia project, or with the Lift project, or with Brother Sion's project, but most Liberians are finding ways to give back to Liberia.
One of the things that we learned in this work with Jewish Community Action is that the Liberian expatriate or exile community here in Minnesota sends between $7 and $8 million a month back to Liberia. That helps a whole lot of people back in Liberia. It's not unusual. Immigrants have done that since the Irish came in the 1840s. That's what immigrants do. They have extended family networks. And they come to a place that pays better wages, and one of the things they do is send money home. At the same time, the unemployment rate in Liberia is estimated at 80%. Now, how can it be practical to say we're going to force people to go back facing 80% unemployment when they could stay in Minnesota and send millions of dollars back home? It's more important than any aid the United States government might send, because it actually gets to the people who need it. It goes into education, housing, health care. It's not being skimmed off by corrupt government officials. That kind of giving should be protected and enhanced and rewarded in our society. So that's the kind of dynamic that Liberians find themselves in today.
I think generally Liberians are self-deprecating people. I mean, even those people who have the drive to succeed, even those people who are succeeding, if you talk to them, of course there are some, I mean, there are the outliers where if you talk to them, they toot their own horns. But in general, Liberians, even the successful one, would try to downplay their success, even though they know they are successful. And living here, we're getting the sense that if you're not expressive, you don't get listened to. I mean, because we see it all around here, even small groups. I mean, they make a lot of noise to get the point across. So if we as a large group can't do that, then there's no place for us here. So even though we don't want to toot our own horn sometimes, we know that it's necessary at times to make a loud noise. So we have gained the confidence because we have to assimilate into the society. And if that's what the others do to get the point across, then that means we have to do it. Otherwise, we don't get listened to.
Liberians in Minnesota are already a new chapter. From the first stage, there were people trying to just help each other. Between the 50s and the 60s, people just trying to socialize, to connect, to see, okay, we are here in a strange land. How can we create a community? And then to move up to the late 90s, early 2000s, when people were trying to bring their families from back home due to the Civil War, people were just trying to help their families to come here. And then after that, most of the young kids who came over, they were a cultural shock. The assimilation process, people trying to be, I don't want to say quote-unquote American because it might have a negative connotation, but the fact is people saw things on TV and try to emulate those things without necessarily knowing that it was just probably movies or a different lifestyle. So that's where there was the low gap between early 2000 to mid-2000. But then after that, we got hit by epiphany. We're like, how can we give back to our country? Because with all the DED trouble, the TPS trouble, every year there's a problem with TPS. Every year there's a problem with DED. So people are like, yeah, we love it here too also. But we had a great country. So if there's stability, how can we transition from here back home? It's not going to be overnight like the better quality. So you just can uproot yourself regardless of whatever offer you have made back home. You just can uproot yourself and go back home. It has to be a process. And it starts by going back home at least annually or maybe twice a year and just identifying progress, identifying things you can do.
Folks in Liberia want to know what is happening in Minnesota because it's the largest Liberian community everybody knows outside Liberia. Folks in Liberia want to know what is happening in. Guys that left from here, begin ministers, come to Liberian Journal and data, see what's going on in Minnesota. What does the oil and politics look like now? Who are the main players? You know, kind of stuff. You know, and so we also do that for a link. We have several links, social service organization, the city, somebody, you know. So that was just a connection between different. That was the whole goal of the Liberian Journal, to highlight the contributions of Liberians and to celebrate some of our assets that are easily ignored. People think that we creating a social service welfare state, African immigrant welfare state, and that is a drain on the local economy or the state budget. But there's a lot of contributions that's not been highlighted. No one is going to do that because that is not their job to tell your story. That you add to this, you add to the revenue base of the state or the city, you know. And your homeowner, you add to the home value, you help these old folks. No one would like to probably do that. So taking care of the aging population, there's a huge burden on our shoulder. So.
Like every group, every immigrant group, it's been difficult. It's been a struggle. But I think the more now we have, you know, folks here now over a decade, and so people now understanding the inner workings of the system, and people are now understanding how they can make the system work for them and help them and their families and all of that. People are now getting well established and situated where they can support their families and relatives back home. They've now, settled and taken care of themselves, make sure that they have a base, and then they can begin to start, you know, helping their families so back home. According to Professor Bruce Corey from Concordia University in St. Paul, the Liberian immigrant community in Minnesota contributes $247 million to the state economy, to the economy, jobs, with businesses, income, the taxes and everything. So we are a vibrant part of the social fabric and the cultural fabric of the state of Minnesota.
You've been listening to the first part of the history of the Liberian community in Minnesota. In this segment, we spoke with Winfred Russell, Abdullah Kiyotumba, Aurelius Butler, Peter Ratcliffe, Mimini George, Yema Brewer, Piso Tar, and Oliver Clark. In the next segment, we will look at the political, economic, religious, and cultural makeup of the community. Thank you for listening.
Please put your hands together for the original B. Barkley.